So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 51. The chapter is entitled Talks Between Narada and King Prachinapari. Please repeat after me. Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Yato na bhayam anvapi.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Iti veda savai vidvan.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Yo vidvan sa gurur hari.
Savai priyatamaschatma.
Savai priyatamaschatma. Translation appropriate by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. One who is engaged in devotional service has not the least fear in material existence. This is because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a super soul and friend of everyone. One who knows this secret is actually educated, and one thus educated can become the spiritual master of the world. One who is an actually bona fide spiritual master, representative of Krishna, is not different from Krishna. Please repeat. One who is engaged in devotional service,
one who is engaged in devotional service,
has not the least fear,
has not the least fear
in material existence.
This is because
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
is a super soul,
and friend of everyone.
One who knows this secret
is actually educated.
And one thus educated
can become the spiritual master
of the world.
One who is an actually bona fide spiritual master,
representative of Krishna,
is not different from Krishna.
Perfect.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Sakshat Haritvena Samasta Shastrai Uktastathab Yataiva Sadvi.
The spiritual master is described in every scripture as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The spiritual master is accepted as identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is the most confidential servant of the Lord.
Kintu Prabhorya Priyaiva Tasya.
The purport is that both the super soul and the individual soul are very dear to everyone. Everyone loves himself, and when he becomes more advanced, he loves the super soul also. A person who is self-realized does not recommend the worship of anyone but the super soul. He knows that to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is easier than to worship various demigods under the influence of lust and the desire for material enjoyment.
The devotee is therefore always engaged in the loving devotional service of the Lord.
Such a person is a true guru. In the Padma Purana, it is said,
Shat karma nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharada avaishnavo guru nasyat vaishnavasva pacho guru.
Even if a brahmana is very learned in Vedic scriptures and knows the six occupational duties of a brahmana, he cannot become a guru or spiritual master unless he is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, if one is born in a family of dog-eaters but is a pure devotee of the Lord, he can become a spiritual master.
The conclusion is that one cannot become a spiritual master unless he is a pure devotee of the Lord.
One who is a spiritual master in accordance with the above descriptions of devotional service is to be understood as a Supreme Personality of Godhead personally present.
According to the words mentioned here, Guru Hari, consulting a bona fide spiritual master means consulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally.
One should therefore take shelter of such a bona fide spiritual master.
Success in life means accepting a spiritual master who knows Krishna as the only Supreme Beloved Personality.
One should worship such a confidential devotee of the Lord.
Om Gyanam Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshurur Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Tadati Svabhadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyasya Tripasandhu Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha
Savai Priyatamas Chatma Yato Na Bhayam Anbapi Iti Veda Savai Vidvan Yo Vidvan Sagurur Hari.
So this verse is a continuation of the talks between Narada and King Vrijinabhari. So they've been discussing various topics, and now they've come to a very important topic of the spiritual master. So we were in the last few lectures, we're discussing verses, we're discussing education, who's educated, who's not educated, and now the importance of the spiritual master is being described in this verse.
So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing how success in spiritual life, or success in life, not in spiritual, success in life means accepting a bona fide spiritual master.
this is a sentence that Srila Prabhupada repeats very often. It's very interesting actually. He has this phrase, the secret of all success. And one time, one of the devotees who's working for Vanipedia, we were talking about this, and so he did a search on this statement, this phrase of Srila Prabhupada, the secret of all success. And he found that Srila Prabhupada repeats this exact phrase, the secret of all success, about 249 times, something like that. And in most cases, he refers it to other things also, but at least 90% of all these cases, that statement, Srila Prabhupada is saying, the secret of all success is to please the spiritual master. So obviously that begins, that process of pleasing the spiritual master begins by first accepting a spiritual master. Right? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada is saying that, that the most important success in life, or the only success in life in some ways, is accepting that spiritual master. Because without the pleasure and the blessings of the spiritual master, one cannot attain Krishna. One cannot make significant spiritual advancement. And the spiritual master, as we all know, is a representative of Lord Balaram. Right? We have Krishna and we have Balaram. So even if we chant the holy name of the Lord continuously, we read the scriptures continuously, we render service continuously, until we surrender. So these are all processes, you could say, of worshipping Krishna. But until we surrender to Lord Balaram, or Lord Balaram's representative, we cannot become fully purified of our material contamination and attain the shelter of Krishna. In Krishna Leela, we know how Krishna and Balaram, they killed so many demons. Most of the demons were killed by Lord Krishna. But in the Vrindavan pastimes, Lord Balaram killed two demons. Who were those two demons? Dhenukasura, yes. And one more. And Pralambasura, yes. So, we were discussing this before also, how Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes how Krishna specifically doesn't kill these two demons. And he wants Lord Balaram to destroy these demons because he wants to show that without Lord Balaram's mercy, one cannot become free of these anarthas. So each demon in the spiritual, in Krishna's pastimes, represents a particular anartha. It represents a particular fault. And so all these different Krishna, by his mercy, is destroying all these different anarthas. And similarly, in the life of a devotee, all these different demons, and similarly in the life of a devotee who's taking the name of the Lord, who's practicing the process of devotional service, Krishna is destroying these anarthas one by one. But certain anarthas, Krishna cannot in some ways, or does not destroy. He does not finish those anarthas. And those are the anarthas, those are the demons that were killed by Lord Balaram. So which anartha does Pralambasura represent? Yes.
Falsity.
Yes, falsity. That may be one of the qualities, and also someone else's. The mode of passion. Yes. Yes. Because all these demons, they represent generally two or three anarthas that are related. So lust. Pralambasura represents lust or the mode of passion, and also falsity, because they're somewhat related. Because Pralambasura, how does he come in Krishna's Leela? How does he manifest within Krishna's Leela? He manifests as a little boy, right? He comes as a coward boy in Krishna's pastimes. So he thinks he's a big demon, and he thinks, well, the easiest way to get to Krishna and Balaram is if I change my form and I become one of the coward boys. And Pralambasura has done all of his homework before he's making his attack, you could say, on Krishna. He finds out that every day there's always one coward boy that wouldn't go to the forest with Krishna. One of the coward boys wouldn't go because it would be their birthday on that day. So they would stay home because their parents would celebrate their birthday. So that particular day, one of the coward boys had his birthday. And so he was at home with his mother and father and having a birthday party. So Prahlad Masura figured this out, and so he took the form of that specific coward boy. Because you know, Krishna knows all these coward boys. If suddenly there's another one, then people are going to ask, where did this coward boy come from? So he's well aware of Krishna's, kids in general know all their friends. So he's well aware of this. So he takes the form of that particular coward boy. And he joins their play. And of course, there's this pastime where the coward boys make two parties. On one side, the head is Lord Balaram. On the other side is Krishna. And they're engaging in this wrestling. So Prahlad Masura is in the form of a coward boy, is on the side of Krishna. Because he's a little bit afraid of Krishna. He knows Krishna is a very powerful mystic. He's killed all of Prahlad Masura's uncles, his brothers. All these demons were from a very prestigious demon family. See, they're all very powerful demons. So he had killed so many of his friends and relatives that he wanted to be careful with Krishna. So he thought, I'll be on Krishna's side. So this way, I won't have to carry Krishna if I lose, if we lose this game. Whereas I'll carry Lord Balaram. And, Krishna is so attached to Lord Balaram that if I can finish Balaram, then half the work will be done. So he takes the form of this coward boy and he's wrestling with the other coward boys. And of course, Krishna's party loses. And the coward boys who are on Krishna's side, they lose this wrestling match. And Lord Balaram's party wins. So then after that, the price that the losing party had to pay was that each coward boy had to carry the boys from the other party on their shoulders. So Prahlad Masura had to carry Lord Balaram on his shoulder. And then he takes Lord Balaram on his shoulder and he runs away with Lord Balaram. He goes far, far away from Krishna. His first meditation is to take him away from Krishna so he can deal with him one at a time. So he's carrying Lord Balaram and he runs far away with him. And then Lord Balaram, starts to realize what's going on. This is Krishna's yoga maya. So he knows, of course, but he starts to realize that this is an odd situation. This coward boy seems to be taking me too far away from the other boys, and he seems to be too mystical. So then he realizes that, oh, this is actually a demon. And then Lord Balaram starts becoming very heavy. So the demon takes his original form as this big demon, red hair, big mustache, big teeth. And then after that, when he takes his original form and it's been revealed that this is actually not a coward boy but a big demon, then Lord Balaram, with one big blow, he finishes that demon. And that demon dies. So Prahlad Masura, each demon, we can see how it works. It's falsity or the mode of passion. The nature of, you could say, the mode of passion is that it comes as one's friend. A person, doesn't think, you could say, the nature of lust is that one doesn't think that this is one's enemy. It comes as a nice friend, in a very covered form. But then it takes us far, far away from Krishna. Right? It doesn't seem that way, but then it can take us, draw us far away from Krishna. So in the same way, the mode of passion lust can take us far away from Krishna. Or another thing that Prahlad Masura represents is in our devotional service, the desire for material things. So in devotional service, when we gain some material benefits, then those material benefits don't seem like they're material benefits or they're material opulences. They seem as like they're part of our devotional service. They're part of the activities of devotional service. And so oftentimes, we become entranced by them, right? We become attracted by them. And those material, byproducts that a person gains through the practice of devotional service, distract a person from that path and take one away from that path. So this, as we can see, this is a very fundamental anartha that all of us are struggling with. And this fundamental anartha is only removed by the mercy of Lord Balaram, by the mercy of the spiritual master. In the same way, Dhenukasura, what does Dhenukasura represent? Ignorance. Ignorance, and also another aspect, an aspect of ignorance, is mental speculation or material education. So Krishna has a very nice sense of humor. Right? The more we're educated, the more we're like a donkey or an ass. He specifically represents that type of education. So, mental speculation, or you could say ignorance or avidya, is in fact it's one of the toughest anarthas that the soul is dealing with. Because in the material world, this is essentially avidya is the first thing that overcomes us. It's essentially what's binding the soul to the body is this ignorance, this false knowledge of identifying ourselves with a material body, losing our knowledge about Krishna, losing our awareness of our spiritual form, of our relationship with Krishna, and becoming aware of our material existence. So Dhenukasura represents avidya. And what's this? One of the primary roles that we see the spiritual master in? We chant before the class, we chant Om Gyanam Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. Right? That the spiritual master, he opens the eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. He frees us from this ignorance and he gives us spiritual knowledge. So this avidya also is only removed, this binding of this material world is only removed by the mercy of the spiritual master. Dhenukasura was in other books that describe Krishna's pastimes in detail. It describes that Dhenukasura was a very difficult demon to kill. Everyone had to work at it. He was when he came, he was in the Talavan forest, turned him around a few times, gave him a few punches. Then he still didn't die. Then he ran to the coward boys, and the coward boys had their sticks. They also, sometimes take pleasure in these things. So they had their sticks, and they started beating him. Then it's described that still he didn't die. And so Dhenukasura, he ran to Govardhan Hill, and he was looking for something to throw at Krishna. The Garga Samhita actually describes this. He pulls out Govardhan Hill, he lifts it up, and he throws it at Krishna. And Krishna catches Govardhan Hill and then he throws it back at Dhenukasura. And it hits him a few times. And then again he takes this hill and throws it back. So a few times this takes place. Then he comes charging towards Krishna. And then Krishna gives him a big punch on the head. And then blood starts coming out. But still he doesn't die. He's so tough, so difficult to finish. And then he runs to Lord Balaram. And then Lord Balaram finally picks him up and he turns him around and he throws him on top of the palm trees, tal trees in the Talavan forest. So, after much effort, both Krishna and the spiritual masters, both Krishna and Balaram, are working at this anartha that's present in our hearts. The anartha of mental speculation, of ignorance, of material knowledge. And they're trying to get rid of this. And finally, by the mercy of both the spiritual master and Krishna, this anartha is destroyed. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that all these other anarthas one can get rid of simply through the process of sadhana bhakti, the normal process that we do of hearing and chanting and reading. But these two anarthas require a special effort from the part of the devotee. That, in other words, the Lord Balaram finished these off because they require a special effort. And that special effort is pleasing the spiritual master, is taking guidance from the spiritual master, gaining the mercy of the spiritual master. And this is why Prabhupada said so many times that pleasing the spiritual master is a secret of success in spiritual life. This is why Krishna's made it this way. This is his process. Otherwise, one could think that, why can we just not attain perfection through through our own personal, or you could say simply through just chanting. And not, and why isn't it that we have to take shelter of the spiritual master? Why isn't it that we can just, you know, so many people try this, that they just engage in the process of sadhana bhakti, but not take shelter of the pure devotee. And this is because it's Krishna's process, that Krishna wants us to do it in this way. Through the mercy of the spiritual master, we can, this process of devotional service actually becomes manifest. So, and one thing that we know is that Krishna and Balaram are non-different. Right? The only difference between Balaram and Lord Krishna is a difference in color. Right? Balaram is white and Krishna is black. So similarly, here Prabhupada is describing that the spiritual master, who is properly situated, who is a pure devotee of the Lord, is non-different than Krishna. And therefore, consulting the spiritual master, he's saying, is the same as consulting Krishna. So this is very true. This is like many devotees have probably experienced this in their life. That how Krishna speaks through the spiritual master. So many times we have the experience of, we have a question in our mind and we open Srila Prabhupada's books and Srila Prabhupada will be discussing that very topic. Or we listen to a tape of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada will be speaking about that. So this is actually a very special thing, that when we're in doubt and when we want to know what would Krishna want us to do in this situation, then when we consult the spiritual master, then by consulting the spiritual master, it's the same as consulting Krishna, taking Krishna's opinion on the matter. What is your opinion on the matter? What should I do? So, by consulting the spiritual master, one gains a very clear direction, a very clear vision on how to, on what is pleasing Krishna, what one should do for the pleasure of Krishna, for the advancement in one's spiritual life. So, success in life means accepting a bona fide spiritual master. This is one point that Srila Prabhupada is making in the purport. Another thing that he's spending a lot of time doing is then discussing the qualifications, the qualities of this spiritual master, who can become a spiritual master. And the first thing that he mentions is that a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master, is not someone who's a pure brahmana, who knows all the Vedic scriptures very nicely, very clearly, is well read in all the Vedic texts. But a spiritual master is one who has developed love for Krishna. He says, he quotes this verse, even if a brahmana is very dear in Vedic scriptures and knows the six occupational duties of a brahmana, he cannot become a guru or spiritual master unless he is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here he's quoting this from Padma Puran, and we find similar statements like this in the Bhagavatam also. Prahlad Maharaj, for example, says a very similar thing, that how almost the exact same verse, he says that how one who's maybe a dog eater but is not averse to the service of the Lord, is in fact drawn to the service of the Lord, is greater than that person who is perfected in all the Vedic scriptures and all the Vedic texts. So this is a very important, especially for Srila Prabhupada's movement, that a spiritual master didn't mean someone who's born in a Brahmin family or is from a certain country or nationality. A spiritual master, a perfect guru, is one who's attained, Prabhupada specifically says here, attained love for the Lord. And he says, the conclusion is, one cannot become a spiritual master unless he is a pure devotee of the Lord. That the spiritual master is one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Now, I was thinking about this, that this word, pure devotee, is, you could say, a very, it can have many meanings. It's a very general term in some ways. So, how can we understand this word, pure devotee? In other words, Prabhupada is saying the conclusion is that the spiritual master, one cannot be a spiritual unless he is a pure devotee. Does a pure devotee, for example, mean that a person who cannot fall down? Or you say, I cannot accept a spiritual master because this so many spiritual masters fall down. Is that the definition of a pure devotee? Is a pure devotee someone who's, you could say, on the level of prema bhakti, or an eternal resident of the spiritual world, who realizes his eternal relationship with the Lord? Is that the definition of a pure devotee? How do we define pure devotee? Does anyone have any thoughts on this? Almost. Yes. Any other suggestions?
A person who makes us remind Krishna.
Okay. Someone who makes us remind Krishna. That Lord Chaitanya said that someone is a devotee, anyone is a devotee who chants the name of the Lord. Right? So anyone who chants the name of the Lord reminds us of Krishna, and such a person is a devotee. It may be that pure devotee requires something more. That person, not only does he remind us of Krishna, but he has further qualifications. So yes, that's true. That is a qualification of a devotee. Any other suggestions? Pure devotee.
The person who can make other pure devotees.
Who can make other pure devotees. Many times, this is how Srila Prabhupada defines the Uttamadhikari devotee. Especially an Uttamadhikari devotee is one who's not only a devotee himself, but he's able to convince others to become pure devotees. Right. So these are all very true definitions, very good definitions. Prabhupada, in many places, he says that a pure devotee is of two types. One is a pure devotee who's completely purified, like we're saying, who is actually a completely pure devotee. Another pure devotee is he who's strictly following the path and is aspiring to be a pure devotee. Such a person can also be considered a pure devotee. So just like Srila Prabhupada, oftentimes he called his disciples pure devotees. I can't remember, but in one quote, there's a quote where he says, all my disciples are pure devotees, he says. So he used that term quite loosely at times, or loosely in the sense of generally at times. So pure devotee can also refer to one who's endeavoring to for spiritual life. Because even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find many great exalted souls who are on the platform of Bhava, who are, very, very elevated, who also experienced fall downs, who also at times experienced difficulties in their spiritual life, but were very exalted. For example, we have the example of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was the type of devotee, he was the character of devotee, who when he used to hear or chant the names of the Lord, tears would flow down his eyes. How many people do we see in this world right now even who are on that level? When they take the name of the Lord, tears flow down from his eyes. It is described that he gave up his kingdom, his family. He was the emperor of the whole world, and his kingdom was more beautiful and vast than the demigods, is described. He gave it up. It says just like as one after passing stool gives up stool. Right? This is how it describes it. There's no attachment there. Like after we pass through, we don't have to think whether or not to flush it down the toilet. It's very easy. It's very obvious that this is what we do. So in the same way, his level of realization was like that. That his detachment wasn't a difficult detachment. It wasn't that he was struggling to try to free himself. He gave up his kingdom and everything with such a feeling of detachment. Prabhupada described that he was on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. He was on the platform of Bhava. And so really, he had no attraction for material life. In some ways not possible for him to fall down. But still, he fell down. He experienced a fall down. And for one lifetime, he became attached to a deer. And starting his next lifetime, he was back on the spiritual path. So, Prabhupada describes that his fall down actually was not as a result, on that stage one cannot fall down as a result of material attraction, but it was actually a conscious decision. He was consciously making a mistake. And because of that, he had to take one more life as a deer, and then in his next life he came back. So it's not that before his fall down, Bharat Maharaj had no devotion for the Lord. He wasn't a devotee on the platform of Bhava. No, he had real devotion, real feelings for the Lord. He was, you could say, he was a pure devotee of the Lord. But still, the path to Krishna is so, Krishna is so careful that we become free of all of our material desires before we come to Him, that still there was a chance of fall down. So in the same way, our experiences, you could say, the various devotees that we may encounter, they may be pure devotees, and we may receive pure guidance from them. Even though at times they may experience, this difficulty in their spiritual life. So because fall down, oftentimes it's a very unnerving experience, because a person puts a faith in a particular spiritual master or a particular person, and they experience real feelings of devotional sentiments and all these things. And then that person may fall down from spiritual life. And then after that, people question their feelings. They say, at that time, I felt some spiritual happiness, some spiritual reciprocation. And it seems like that was false, because obviously this person was not pure, this person fell down. So now when I get those same feelings in my service to Krishna, how can I trust those feelings? Right? How can I trust them? Because before, apparently they weren't real, because I thought this person was a pure devotee. I experienced this great bliss in that person's association. But now that person has fallen down, so obviously those feelings were false, and now I'm getting those feelings again, so maybe these feelings are false again. But no, those are true feelings that we experience in spiritual life, because one can, in other words, even the, at that time when Bharat Maharaj was practicing devotional service, he had attained to a very high state. When tears were flowing down his eyes, he was performing such wonderful devotional service towards the Lord. But then later on, there was a temporary fall in his spiritual life. So, the point of all this is that the pure devotee of the Lord is one who's... There's two types of pure devotees. One who's actually pure, and Srila Prabhupada says one should endeavor to try to find a Paramahansa spiritual master, a person who's completely purified, with no chance to fall down. But also a pure devotee can refer to someone who's endeavoring on that path, who's strictly following, even though that person hasn't completely attained the perfectional stage of spiritual life. So, in either case, shelter of the spiritual master has to be taken. And one should not delay that activity. Because Prabhupada is saying success in life means accepting a spiritual master. So we don't know how long we're going to live. Like, none of us, we don't know. So before we die, we want to take shelter of the spiritual master. Because that is needed. That shelter is needed in order to go back to God, back to Krishna. Okay, I'll stop here. Time is up. I'm over time.
I heard one point that Bharat Maharaj actually was born again because he did not ask his spiritual master for permission to get a deer.
Oh wow. To what?
To get what?
To have a deer.
To have a deer. Oh, I see.
He found a deer and adopted the deer.
I see.
He didn't ask any. Wow. He didn't ask questions. Of the
thing.
Yeah,
really? Wow. I didn't know.
Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. She's saying, Mother Rubina is saying that it's in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
It's in one of Prabhupada's purpose.
At the very end, when Jadvard is instructing Maharaj Bhuvana, it's at the very end of that section of the report where Prabhupada said that the problem is because he was saying a Kula Ashram, but he didn't mean solely Kula about what he was doing. He didn't say, okay, there's this orphan baby here, what should I do with it? He just took it on himself to make his own decisions.
Wow. Yes, at every stage, as it shows, that he was at the platform of Bhava Bhakti, but at every stage, the no matter how advanced we become, we never become advanced enough to avoid or not to be considered of the instructions of the spiritual master.
I have a question. Well, we hear that it's very important to teach others spiritual master to please him. So in practice, sometimes we are maybe not sure what that means, and especially in case of Srila Prabhupada, we see through his lectures and purports and conversations that he had very high expectations from his disciples. So then, as we more get information about that, we feel or we find ourselves that you're not really following everything, that you're not really understanding. And then how to reconcile this field of guilt, you know, I'm not there still, am I cheating actually, I'm not really following, how can I actually please, I have a chance to please Srila Prabhupada.
A nice example is the life of Dhruva Maharaj. We can learn the qualities of a good disciple by seeing the example of Dhruva. You could say a sincere disciple, and you could say almost a perfect disciple, doesn't need to be a pure devotee, or even a disciple who's free from all material desires. Dhruva Maharaj, he, as you know, he had this desire to become king, to take revenge from his father and stepmother, because he had been insulted by them. And so he went to the forest in search of trying to fulfill his desire. And when he came to the forest, there he met Narad Muni. His first spiritual master was his mother, who told him to go to the forest, and then his second spiritual master was Narad Muni. And Narad Muni gives him the instruction to go back home. He says, why are you being so affected by this? You know, the quality of a devotee is that he's not affected by honor or dishonor. So just, you know, rise above it. And Dhruva Maharaj, he's unable to follow that instruction. Right? So he tells that to his spiritual master. He says, at this point, I'm not on that level. I'm unable to follow this instruction that you've given me. So please give me another instruction that I can follow. And I'll try to execute that perfectly, and this is the best I can do. And Srila Prabhupada describes that because he perfectly followed the instruction of his spiritual master, he attained perfection. So then not only he gives him a second instruction, which is easier for him to follow, which is worshipping the Lord and performing great austerities, and as a result he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. So that's actually the quality of a good disciple, is that that disciple may not be able to follow all the, you know, may not be able to follow everything, but he's submissive. This is the quality of the speaker of the Bhagavatam, right? The qualification of who's the speaker of the Bhagavatam. Shaunaka Rishi is described as qualified because he was submissive to his spiritual masters. He received their benedictions because he was submissive. He did what they asked them to do. The qualification isn't that we need to be a pure devotee. So if the disciple is submissive and then tells the spiritual master, okay, I'm unable to follow this instruction, what else can I do? How can I come to that platform? Then that's an ideal disciple.
In relation to these two types of people, the one who is pure in heart, the one who is on the way when there comes from conditions by one's desires, but from the moment when one desires to please the spiritual master or to please Krishna, then he's on the way of liberation. So if one is this desire to become pure, it's in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Abhaya Sattva Samsudhi, the desire for purification, then I understand Srila Prabhupada's explanation that because someone asked him how many pure devotees are there in ISKCON, and Srila Prabhupada asked his secretary, how many members do we have
in ISKCON?
Because all the disciples want to make spiritual advancement, and in that sense, one is imperceptibly liberated. Only time is between us. And in that sense, Srila Prabhupada suggests all my disciples are pure devotees.
Yes, it's a very nice point. Thank you, Prabhupada. It's only a matter of time. So once we develop that strong desire that I want to follow the spiritual master, I want to become a pure devotee, then that person is as good as a pure devotee, because in due course of time that person will become a pure devotee. And that's why in some ways when we find faults in devotees, this is why it's an offense, because it's not true, because actually that fault doesn't exist, because that person has actually become pure. In other words, it's only time, because the only time is separating that devotee. Of course, we have to discriminate and do like that. But truly, they don't exist, because it's only a matter of time. Yes. Last point.
You mentioned that one way without his feelings
So how do we relate to instructions that we may have received before, after? The instruction that the spiritual master, the Krishna, will speak through the spiritual master, if the spiritual master is pure, right? So at that time, when the spiritual master was properly situated, the instructions that the spiritual master gives to the disciple are very significant. And the books that the spiritual master may write, or the lectures that the spiritual master may give, are very valuable for the disciple. In other words, they are good. They're very good literature. Now, of course, until a person, you could say, is fully purified in heart, you could say, the quality of writing, you could say, may be different. So this is what's so special, you could say, about Srila Prabhupada's books, is because he was who he was. His books are the law books for our movement for the next 10,000 years. So therefore, we make that distinction. In other words, Srila Prabhupada's books are, his writings are, we know, the most important for every devotee to read, because he's on that platform. But Prabhupada told all his disciples to write. Every disciple, just like we give classes, can write and give their realizations. And those realizations, at the time when the spiritual master is pure and is in a properly situated, are very valuable. They're valuable, just like the classes that we come and hear, instruction that we may receive from other devotees, because they're the realizations of a devotee who's properly situated at that time, who's endeavoring for spiritual life. Now, there'll be a difference actually between that and Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books like that. But we need to hear from different Vaishnavas. This is why we have Bhagavatam class, and we hear the realizations of different devotees. It's because these things, they help us in our spiritual life. Because they're looking at the same subject matter in different ways. They're purifying us in different ways. Yeah. So in conclusion, they are still very valuable. They're the realizations of a great devotee.
There are two things that you read the text, and you have also the person who is reading it. So something is changed, the text is the same, but the person who is reading it, and the receptivity has changed. So then there is a different quality of the whole exchange. So how to relate to that? I mean, does something has to change enough to be more receptive, or just a kind of natural?
And then, so the nature of the relationship may slightly change, but in our scriptures we have many examples. Even of Brahaspati, for example, who is the spiritual master of the demigods, very exalted soul. These people, they see Krishna when Krishna has his pastimes on the planet, all these things. Brahaspati also, at one point, we read in Bhagavatam, has a fall down. But still, he has a fall down, and then after that, he sort of realizes his mistake and all these things, and then the demigods still respect him as a spiritual master. So, naturally, I mean, this is why spiritual life, Srila Prabhupada says, is like a razor's edge, because nothing is written for everything is subjective in some ways. It requires our prayers to Krishna and our own intelligence at that time and how to apply it properly. It requires us to assess the situation at every moment. There's user's manual that we can just follow, and okay, this is how we do spiritual life. We have, for example, in those situations, we take shelter of other Vaishnavas also and take their advice also, how to respond to situations like that. So we find so many examples of this in the Bhagavatam, and this is how they deal with it, is that they try to do what is best in the circumstances, trying to take shelter of the Vaishnavas, take their advice, and see what's the best thing to do. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.